We're sort of making fucking up a habit on this podcast, Matt. We fucked up again.
Yes, we did. We did. We realized right afterwards.
Yeah. We got so passionate towards the end of the episode. This is a good episode, freaks. We high-fived after we hit end record after this episode. But we forgot to mention that we're recording a live episode of Rabbit Hole Recap next week at the Bitcoin 2019 conference.
On the rooftop.
On the roof to end it out.
It's a beer garden on the rooftop.
So if you freaks have been on the fence of whether or not you're going to be go, maybe this is a little bit of an incentive to push you towards the conference. If you use the code TFTC25, you're going to get 25% off your tickets. And hey, we're going to be doing it live. We have no idea what's going to happen. We had one live show before in early January for the 10-year anniversary. It was a fuck ton of fun. Price is up 3x since. Five drink Matt came out. He might come out next week. We don't know.
Nah, he's not. Maybe four drink Matt.
Okay, we'll find out. I'm pumped for the conference. Are you?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be great. It's going to be a great time. Hope to see plenty of you there.
Yeah. So, again, Bitcoin 2019 conference, TFTC25, if you guys want 25% off that.
Cheers.
Cheers. What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty Bent here on a Wednesday night, off night for a Rabbit Hole Recap, sitting down with Matt on a gloomy, rainy Wednesday night. What's going on, dude?
I'm excited to be here, as usual.
A lot to talk about. Before we jump in to what we have to talk about, we are at block 581,487, according to my node, which was launched via Pierre Rochard's node launcher. Shout out, Pierre. And according to the Trade Block XPX index, the price of Bitcoin is $9,168.52. And this episode of Rabbit Hole Recap is brought to you by Unchained Capital. You freaks know all about them. They have the 2 of 3 multi-sig vault program. Product that allows you to store your Bitcoin, and Unchained will be one key in that 2 of 3 multi-sig. And if you ever need their help to sign, you can tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, will you sign this for me? I'm trying to move some coin. They're there for you via the vault service. They also have their lending service on the other side. And eventually you'll be able to use your Bitcoin in your vault to take out US dollar denominated loans. So you don't have to sell your Bitcoin and avoid those tax events. And then on top of this, if you freaks are going to sign up now, you're going to get 3 free months of Safe Adenomosis, the Bitcoin standard research bulletin. Go to unchained-capital.com/vaults. Unchained-capital.com/vaults. Also brought to you by the Cash App. Cash App hot in the news this week. It's been hot for the last 2 years. Number one app in the finance store, as you freaks know, for the last 2 years. First P2P payments app to let you buy and sell Bitcoin and send to a personal wallet. And now they're rolling it out. You can send it from your own personal wallet back to the app if you ever need to sell Bitcoin or fund your cash card with some digital cash. So that's rolling out. I have it. We'll talk about this in a little bit further in the episode. So go download the Cash App. Take advantage of their Boost program. Like I said last week, they rolled out DoorDash and Popeyes are new Boost. So you can go save money there. Yeah, it's a cool card. Personalize it. Put your signature. Go to your local app store. Download the Cash App. Matt.
Howdy.
Howdy. Hot week. Are you feeling tired of the Libra talk already?
Yeah, that burnt out like within a couple hours. Well, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, we're about to bring it back up and probably talk about it for a good bit here. So for you freaks that probably already know, Facebook has come out and launched launched a blog and a GitHub page about and a test net for their,
you know, like a splash website.
Yes, for Libra.
They announced it. They formally announced.
So it looks like it's a quasi SDR they're looking to create.
Well, the first thing that's really important is they went with Libra, right?
Yes.
Not Global Coin.
They went with Libra.
Smart move.
Smart
way
move.
Better name.
Really coming at the Winklevi there. Bold move, I think.
Gemini versus Libra.
Yes. So let's talk about it a little bit. They came out. So basically the plans for it's funny. They market it as a blockchain, but if you go read the white paper, they very clearly say it's not a blockchain. They're using Byzantine fault tolerance consensus mechanism created by VMware or something like that.
It's called hot stuff.
Yeah. So it's not a blockchain. In any way, it's not a chain of blocks. It's not using proof of work or anything like
that. It's like an account model, right? Where it shows.
Yes, it's more similar to Ethereum in that regards, where it's an account model.
But Ethereum actually has blocks.
Yes,
This doesn't actually have blocks.
No. And then on top of that, it's something, another thing that Ethereum did that Libra is also doing. They created their own scripting language. Would they call it Move?
What, Libra's?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it's called Move or something like that. Similar to Go. But yeah, so they created their own scripting language. And the plan is the Libra will be a stable coin that is backed by a basket of other currencies and financial assets. So they're creating like a quasi SDR, which is a basket of currencies that the IMF uses sometimes.
They could even potentially hold Bitcoin at some point.
At some point, it is digital cash. And
so it's not really a stable coin. It's like it'll fluctuate in value, apparently.
No, I think the way I understand it will be something where the value stays stable, and they're basically working with the assets in the underlying basket to make sure it stays stable, like buying and selling those assets to keep the peg.
To keep the peg at $1, to peg it to $1?
That's what I would imagine. They don't have a free float, right?
I'm pretty sure they do. It seems like that's how people are interpreting it.
I think I've seen people interpret as a Trojan horse to eventually get to a free float, where they'll just posture that they're trying to keep the peg via the basket, but eventually just let the coin float on its own. We shall see. We shall see if it ever even comes to fruition. So
it might not even launch.
It might not even launch. So it just came out right before we hit record that the House Finance Committee is calling Facebook into they're having a hearing about Facebook coin July 17th. So it's drawn the ire of Congress. It's funny that Bitcoin for the last decade is sort of been ignored by everyone except for Brad Sherman at the Congress level, congressional level. But as soon as Facebook Libra comes out, their alarms are going off, and that's brought up a lot of discussion. Is this similar to something like Liberty Reserve? Is that what Facebook's trying to do? And is it like a huge dick flex by Facebook? Like, are they very confident in themselves and making a very bold move on the geopolitical stage? Like, what is this? Is this something like, is it similar to Liberty Reserve? Should it be shut down? Is it like very much like a cryptocurrency? Still very vague.
What's interesting here is, well, first of all, what Facebook announced, do they have like 25 partners or something already?
Yes, Visa, MasterCard, Uber.
Tons of heavy hitters. PayPal, I think eBay is there.
Yes. I think USV.
Yeah, a bunch of VCs. Andreessen Horowitz is there.
Yeah. So what is it going to be? Like, is it... It sort of reminds me of R3 and those consortiums.
Yeah, I mean, those never launched. But they never got to that fully fleshed out of a plan. Like, R3 and stuff was supposed to be a private blockchain, right? Like, this is supposed to be publicly accessible to some degree, it seems. And people keep... We don't really know exactly what they're looking for here because people keep going back and forth about whether or not you're going to need to pay that $10 million up to run the node. And then there's this other thing, which we had talked about in the discussion earlier in previous episodes, about just because they're giving $10 million doesn't mean
that'll be the total market cap of the basket?
Well, no. They're giving $10 million, but they're getting tokens in return for the $10 million. And those tokens are security tokens that are for a piece, I think it's for voting power and a piece of the revenues of the network. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But yeah, this is why like decentralization is important, right? Like the government can easily stop this. They could just tell Facebook they can't do it.
Well, it seems like they're posturing like they may do that. But this is a bold move by Facebook. A lot of people on the interweb have been... I've been saying that this is sort of the death knell of the mindset that government and central bank run currencies are the end all be all. Like Facebook coming out and saying, hey, we're going to create a currency, even though Bitcoin has been doing that for the last decade. Maybe it's the catalyst for which the masses awaken to the fact that there is a free market for currencies at the moment.
The difference here with like Liberty Reserve or any of the stable coins like Gemini or Tether or whatnot, those were all just we keep a dollar in the bank and we give you a dollar digital. This is, I'm pretty sure this is a free floating basket. And I'm not sure how that will work out. And I do at least applaud them for keeping it interesting. So we can like watch it all unfold. They also, I mean, I think if this, if the U.S. government does let them go through, they're obviously going to make them do like full KYC, full AML regulations, whatnot. So you have like this, a similar situation as all the other issues we have with these centralized platforms where people get deplatformed, they get blocked, they get censored, they get tracked.
Yeah.
So it clearly doesn't compete with Bitcoin.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Let's make that clear. It doesn't compete with Bitcoin. And that's what's, like you said, you're happy they made it interesting. And it is very interesting because they're really competing with the mainstream currencies.
Yeah, they're actually trying to make like a quasi corporate central bank is what they're doing. Like, yeah. That's a pretty bold fucking move.
Right.
You know? And so like, as much as like I hate Zuckerberg, like that's, you know, that takes balls. And especially going like this whole consortium approach, like he's playing for keeps. He's not.
Yeah.
He's like, not dicking around with just, you know, because he could easily have just launched a fiat USD stablecoin, just, you know, put $100 million in a bank account, print 100 million tokens, issue them on Stellar. That would have been super easy for him to do.
It was. It's funny that you're not funny, but I love that you mentioned like the consortium, like all the partners. Like, is this a corporate coup on like government money? Like having MasterCard, Visa, PayPal, Uber, some of the biggest VC funds, when they get pulled in front of the House House Financial Committee, eventually, are they going to be able to be like, look, we've got all these incredible American corporations that are in on this. Are you really going to deny sort of the bread and butter of what makes America run, which is a lot of these companies?
I think what they really fucked up with is Facebook, rightfully so, has a really bad image right now in America. So they should have just been a minor consortium member. You know, like they should have had Visa propose it or something like that. They should have started with just, oh, we'll do a fiat backed. And then once they have that US dollar one out, then, you know, start messing around with free floating ones when you already have the whole infrastructure in place. Like they were a little bit too, it looks like they were a little bit too bold with it, which also kind of reminds me of the whole Kin ordeal where they thought they're like above the law. And, you know, if you take steps too far, like the government will, you know, eventually step in.
All right, let's put some odds on this. What are your odds of it actually launching within the next year?
Well, they said they're going to launch in 2020 is their initial, okay. Right? January 2020 or something.
All
right,
let's change the.
They probably won't.
By the end of 2020. What are the odds?
Is it like 20%?
Yeah, I would put it even lower. I'd say like 10%.
I don't know, just because it's like a pretty fleshed out plan to begin with. The only way they don't is if the U.S. Gov blocks it. And, you know, I think there's, you know, a bunch of people posted. I know Ty posted that E-Corp Mr. Robot clip.
Let's shout out Mr. Robot for providing us with ammo years ago for this situation. It's perfect.
And that's the argument they'll make, right? So this is going to be fully regulated. You'll know everyone who's transacting. You'll be able to try, like, we'll bend over backwards for you. It'll be, you know, your currency as well. And I think like that's like a decent argument, especially as like a way to potentially try and defang Bitcoin.
Do you think it could defang Bitcoin though?
No, I don't think so. But I don't think they realize yet like the implications of Bitcoin.
No. Certainly not. Which segues us into our next topic, which is Cash App opening up deposits, which we talked about in the ad. Disclaimer, Cash App sponsor of this podcast.
Which we talked about in the ad.
Yeah. But they opened up deposits, and it's funny to see the dichotomy of the approach Facebook has taken this to Square and Cash. You have two tech titans in Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey, who started the two biggest social networks in the world, and they're going completely different routes. And it seems that Cash App is sort of getting that Bitcoin has bigger implications than some might realize at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Cash App's clearly going, you know, Square seems to be going heavy in the Bitcoin direction. They're very focused. I think the big thing about this deposits, you always could withdraw Bitcoin from Square, but now from Cash App, but now you can also deposit Bitcoin to Cash App, and then once you're in there, you can sell it for U.S. dollars, and you can use that in the Cash App ecosystem. So you can either send that to a person, or you can use that through your Cash Card, right? And that's a Visa debit. You can use it anywhere Visa is accepted.
Yeah, you could even send Bitcoin straight to Cash Appers now if they had their deposits open. They could just send you their address.
Oh, right. You can just withdraw to their address. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So the big thing here, I think, is that for the longest time, we've had altcoiners' main arguments against Bitcoin are they want lower fees, they want the transactions to be faster, and they want there to be less volatility. And you get all three of those things through Cash App with this feature. Now, the issue is there's a trade-off there that all those things trade off with censorship resistance. They trade off with, you know, distribution and decentralization, censorship resistance. So those altcoins that have gone that route, the low fee route, the fast transactions, have made that trade off, and they can't compete with Cash App. So they're becoming centralized. They're inevitably going to be even more centralized. And Cash App is just like, we're just fully centralized, and you get, you know, no fee transactions, no volatility, instant, basically.
Yeah, no, and it's important to talk about these trade-offs, and this is a heavy topic of this podcast throughout the years, is the trade-offs with the services they use. And yes, know that there are trade-offs when you use Cash App. They KYC AML you. In fact, when you initially enable your deposits, you have to answer some questions about where your income's coming from and who you work for and stuff like that. So just be aware of that.
It's like four questions.
Yeah, four questions, pretty straightforward. Pretty benign in my opinion, but
it's like normal KYC.
Yeah. But yeah, it comes with trade-offs. They're going to know you. They're going to know where your UTXOs are coming from when you're sending them to the Cash App. So make sure you have your on-chain use of Bitcoin locked down. Make sure you're using Wasabi, sending it to a personal wallet, and then Cash App, or straight from Wasabi to Cash App. So
use CoinJoin.
Yeah, use CoinJoin. We'll talk about CoinJoins later in the episode as well. Some new developments there. But yeah, just realize what you're engaging with when you're using these different services. And the trade-offs are there to provide optionality. And that's like, obviously there's hardcore Bitcoiners out there. It's like, if you're not using this way, you're not doing it right. But what people have to realize, and there's good argument and there's strong arguments to be made in that direction, but optionality exists for a reason. And people like options. And this is just another option that exists and helps Bitcoin in the long run.
Yeah, as holders of the hardest money available, the best money available, Bitcoiners are going to have many different options with many different trade-offs. I think this is a feature that I will never use, at least not in the near term. If I was going to spend Bitcoin, it would be at like a small business that accepts Bitcoin directly, doesn't convert it, and gives me a discount. The key here, though, is a lot of people do want this feature. A lot of people have used this as ammunition against Bitcoin. I mean, look at just like BitPay's whole business model over the years, which was to like encourage businesses to accept Bitcoin only to automatically convert it to fiat on their end. So now you don't need a merchant to enable that kind of system. You can just use Cash App. You convert it to fiat for the merchant before they receive it. And basically it takes that whole argument of, oh, well, can you spend it anywhere? Can you do this? Like, yes, now you could spend it wherever Visa is accepted. You know, that point is moot. And any altcoins that make this same trade-off, you know, coins like Ripple, like, they're going to have, like, full KYC. It's just a matter of time. They just need the government to finally get aware. You know, like, look how they're reacting to Facebook. It's just because they read it in Wall Street Journal. Like, they don't really know what Ripple's up to. When they start to figure it out, they're going to make sure that it's just full KYC everything.
Yes. Yeah, so be aware. That's a shout out to Cash App for... They didn't even make a big announcement about it. That's the other thing. Again, disclaimer, sponsor the pod. We're pumping them pretty hard here. But they just get shit done and roll it out. Like, they didn't even make a big announcement about deposits being rolled out. Like, it was just... I got tweets from people being like, yo, did you get your deposits enabled as well? And with screenshots.
They just started slowly rolling it out.
Yeah. And then also, for future rollouts, a little birdie told me that Beck 32 will be enabled soon on the Cash App. Very relatively soon.
They just keep notching off checks off the checklist. So yes. That'll allow you to send directly to Wasabi now, which is nice.
Yes. So keep on trucking, Cash App team.
And it'll be better on fees, even though they pay the fees. It'll be better on fees and for the network and whatnot.
Yeah. So beware of that. That was a big enough. I mean, that the rollout started over the weekend, it looks like. And
they started batching transactions too.
Boss. Looks like they're going to their Bitcoin OPTEC meetings.
There you go.
What was I going to say? I forget what I was going to say there. On to the next one. Whirlpool, talking about coin joins. Whirlpool beta's been released, correct?
Yeah, they had the...
Or is alpha?
A bunch of... I think they're calling it alpha? I don't know. But either way, it's their public testing round. They were doing private testing round that I was participating in. Now they're doing the public testing round. So anyone can download the Whirlpool client. You download it on your computer. You pair it with your Samurai wallet on your phone. And then, yeah, so it does the coin joins on the computer, and then you can send them within the app in the Samurai app on your phone, which is pretty cool.
And these have smaller minimums than Wasabi has at the moment.
Right. So first of all, from the get-go, they're supporting multiple pool sizes, which in Samurai, they're not. Samurai is just, there's one pool size. It's 0.1 Bitcoin minimum.
You know, Wasabi.
10 million sats, yeah.
That's Wasabi.
And then Samurai, there's two pools available to you. There's one that's 5 million sats, so 0.05 Bitcoin. And then there's one that's 1 million sats, 0.01 Bitcoin minimums. And they default to smaller round sizes. So Samurai round, the Samurai Whirlpool rounds are at 5 people, 5 participants. And then Wasabi rounds are either every 2 hours or when 100 participants are hit. So it's two different approaches. The idea with Samurai is that you'll have a little bit of privacy quickly, and you can just keep remixing to get to your desired anonymity set.
From your experience, what's better from a fee perspective?
Well, I mean, I imagine Wasabi will be better from a fee perspective because you have, less rounds. With more participants per round. But I've just started getting Test Samurai. They're still building up their liquidity and whatnot. There really hasn't been enough time or to make any kind of real conclusions.
Yeah, so we're going to drop that GitHub page in the show notes. Make sure you guys go check that out if you're running Samurai wallets. Start experimenting with it. Start coin joining.
The spend from Samurai wallet, I've been told, is just... they have a tighter integration coming, but like just as it is right now is super slick. You just press the menu button, you press spend from Whirlpool, and you can just spend from your Whirlpool balance.
And they have good coin selections going on too. Like they'll let you know like what it's connected to before you send it and stuff like that.
Well, it's the same way they did it previously, which is you can freeze unspent outputs.
Yeah. And they the Samurai team, they've been putting cool charts from OXT.me about their Whirlpools, visualizations of it. It's just like nothing important, but really cool to look at. See,
it looks cool.
Yeah. See how everything becomes entangled. IOTA was working on Tangle, but I think Samurai figured it out better with their Whirlpool. again, we'll put that in the show notes.
And I'm testing it out with Wasabi outputs as well, just to be,
So you're sending from Wasabi too?
Yeah, I'm already Wasabiing before I.
You're compounding your
send it there.
Compounding your coin joining.
Yeah.
On to the next topic. We talked about Binance last week. Shout out to your Binance call. We talked about BNB.
It was fucking perfect, man. I mean, we had been calling it forever, but yeah.
Yeah, no, perfect. Could not have been timed perfectly. Last week's RHR, we shit on BNB and Leo.
That was a rant. That was one of my biggest rants.
It was a good rant, too. And it was a very timely rant because less than 12 hours later, Binance came out and said they're blocking U.S. users and opening up another exchange for U.S. users specifically, but that'll be completely KYC'd. And they've already started geofencing off the U.S. and blocking U.S. citizens.
And it'll be like three coins or something.
Yeah.
And it'll like be like an on-ramp.
Yeah, and like we said last week, it's the inevitable trajectory of these shitcoin casinos. They get too big for their own good and have to comply with the government, or they get in trouble.
So, you know, like, it's one of those... So, first of all, they all end up having to do this. They get too big. We've talked about this forever. They get too big, then they get a target on their back, and then they have to start tightening up ship. The issue that I will personally point out is BitMEX has been in a similar issue. They have never tried to connect to fiat in any way, so they're more insulated. But they banned U.S. users as well, and they said no U.S. users can go. But people, you can, like, if you just, you can use a VPN around it, and it's like, see no evil, speak no evil, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're not going to say anything if you use a VPN around it. If you end up connecting through USIP, they like automatically block you, but they let you withdraw your coins. So not only will they turn the blind eye on the VPN, but if you slip up, I'm pretty sure they just let you take all your coins back. They just close your account. With Binance is flagging VPNs, like shared VPNs. If a shared VPN, if a user of a shared VPN gets flagged for something, Binance will then lock every account that used that shared VPN. So like the way like VPN services work, like Movad and stuff, is like a bunch of users are all connecting through the same IP. And usually that gives you more privacy because there's so many different people surfing under that IP. But with Binance's case, if they flag one account, they lock down every single account with that IP and then force KYC on you to get your coins. You can't get your coins without KYC. So I think that to me implies that they are feeling extra vulnerable. Like they have to go above and beyond to make like that's super risky for a U.S. user to use in that situation. So they're going above and beyond to be regulatory compliant, and that's because they're a huge target. And I think that users will gravitate towards new options that respect privacy and don't require KYC information for altcoin trading, which, you know, never connects to fiat in the first place.
Yes. So good call, good rant, good timely rant last week. Binance geofencing off U.S. users and open. They plan to open it. The CZ came out and said this is a short term hit for like a long term gain. Basically saying they're going to roll out like a U.S. exchange and it's going to be okay when that happens.
Yeah, when I called him out on the random KYC, he gave like a complete PR bullshit response, admitting to doing it. Right, like he's a really good salesman. I mean, look, he's got his hand over the fire. Like everyone's going after him right now. So it's hard to give him too much shit, but of course, what else is he going to say? Of course he's going to say that, but all of his plays, all of his other Binance subsidiary plays have basically the idea has been a fiat on ramp. Right. And then I guess like his long-term play, is this pseudo DEX they have. Right. Which I think might be blocking U.S. users too. I'm not even sure, but eventually could block U.S. users because it's not really decentralized at all. They have full control over that DEX, so that's just like a regulatory arbitrage play. So I'm assuming like his idea is that he wants to have all these different regulated fiat on ramps into Bitcoin and probably Ethereum, so you give them the fiat on ramps and then they can come into his DEX. His pseudo DEX. It's not really a DEX, but it's non-custodial, I guess, even though it's all in the BNB chain, which is completely owned by him. So
yeah, it's all a facade to keep the show going and make it seem like Binance is still what it once was when it was a pure shitcoin casino, but it's not. That again, the honeymoon phase is over. They got too big for their own good, and this is what happens. This is inevitable. We've said this many times. We don't have to repeat ourselves. It feels good to be right though, doesn't it?
I mean, to be fair, Leo pumped in the meantime. So
on the Binance news.
I mean, I just in general, it just keeps pumping. So that part of the rant has not been proven correct yet.
Not yet. But markets can remain irrational far longer than you can remain solvent. Not that you're trading that.
And then also we have Binance added they created like Bitcoin Tether, wrapped Bitcoin or whatever.
Yeah, I don't understand this.
It's a Bitcoin stablecoin, I mean, it's on BNB. It's a token on BNB chain that represents like a certain number of Bitcoin they hold, right? So each token is, it's like Tether, but instead of US dollars in an account, it's Bitcoin in an address. Obviously, it's not trustless at all. You have to completely trust them. It's not really Bitcoin. It's an IOU. It's just like if you were holding Bitcoin on Binance, basically. But it connects that DEX ecosystem with the largest trading pair in altcoin land, which is Bitcoin. So it goes hand in hand with that play. But the question comes down to, do regulators let him just say it's a decentralized exchange when it's not fucking decentralized? And I think inevitably they won't. But until then, it's just kind of like cover.
Yeah. So we'll be following that shit show as it unravels. It's been unraveling pretty quickly. So we'll see if Binance US ever comes to fruition, how popular it will be if it does.
The real question, which I'm asking myself, is what will be the next altcoin casino? What will be, you know, we had Bittrex, we had Poloniex. Poloniex is trying to claw its way back, where they re-added the troll box. Well, but they have KYC now, and I think once you start going the full regulated, you're no longer the altcoin casino.
Well, this is an interesting question to ask, because do you think a phoenix arises from the ashes? Because how did Binance get to where it was? How did it become most profitable beginning? It was paying it was asking for listing fees for shitcoins, and that was like a lot of their profit in the beginning. That's how a lot of these shitcoin casinos start out. They get coins to pay them to get listed. And I don't know if I see like the proliferation of projects like we've seen in the past to provide that sort of profit that existed in the past. So I don't know if I could see like another, I don't know. I could be wrong.
There's always a new altcoin casino, Marty.
But this time the altcoin casino is the exchange itself, where it's like IEO. So it's the exchanges running them. Like that's the next iteration of the ICO is exchange run. So this is, we find ourselves in this weird area where, like the next hot thing isn't making an altcoin, forking a code base and creating a coin and buying your way on an exchange. I don't know if that's going to be the case anymore. Could be. I don't know, though.
I think listing fees will still be there. It just, you know, they will go to astronomical prices during bull runs and during accumulation cycles. Like that doesn't happen.
We'll see. I'm skeptical that business model is repeatable in the future.
But I think regardless of that business model, you're still going to see like a new altcoin casino, whether that's like a pseudo DEX, whether that's just a bucket shop that operates in a different jurisdiction.
If we have any DGen altcoin traders that listen to this podcast, let us know. Let us know if you're seeing any future Binances pop up out there. Because we brought up Beaksy Exchange last week. But
it's definitely not going to be Beaksy. It's full KYC.
Yeah, so it's not them. That's like the one exchange I've seen pop up that people have been talking about, but nothing.
If you wanted to do like full KYC, you just use like Poloniex or Bittrex.
Is Cryptopia still around?
Look at Coinbase. Coinbase is basically token based now, right?
Yeah. Is Cryptopia still around?
I don't fucking know. No, didn't they? They were the ones who got hacked. They're the New Zealand one that's got got hacked and they're in bankruptcy or something.
Yeah.
Didn't they? Like they brought the police involved. The police were like, I don't even know how to send an email.
What the hell is this internet money you're talking about? You got internet money stolen? I thought it was digital tulips, man.
Exactly.
How'd you get these flowers stolen?
Then they just had to go into bankruptcy. That was completely fucked.
R.I.P. Cryptopia. Yeah, so again, if any of you freaks are aware of a shitcoin casino popping up, let us know. We want to follow it.
I think shitcoin traders got a little bit spoiled with Binance. It was like more of a rarity.
Well, because not only that, but like Binance was like, the best UX, the easiest onboarding. It worked. It had liquidity like right away.
Exactly. I think we're about to go into like another Cripsy era. You know, like so there's going to be like they're going to flock to an exchange.
Big Vern coming back?
That's like really shitty, but everyone just culps, you know, they just deal with it because it's like the only place they can trade.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think is about to happen.
Where in the world is Big Vern? What the hell is he up to these days?
He exit scammed, right? Didn't he?
Did he go to jail? I'm not sure if he got arrested.
He was like Florida based. He should have.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough of that.
Enough of that. Next topic. Lightning Labs. They released their Lightning wallet today.
We both downloaded it immediately. Like good Bitcoiners.
Both downloaded it. I'm still syncing.
He's on iPhone. I'm on Android. I synced within 40 minutes.
I'm on hour two right now.
Okay, so see, look, unlock with pin.
I know Matt's pin.
Yeah, my super secure pin. Look.
You're in
so mine synced and it was working, and now it's, you know, they say this one's definitely alpha, they say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely alpha.
And now it won't open. So I have $50 on there. I think it's 600,000 sats.
Yeah, I've recovered from a seed phrase and we'll have a good chunk on the Lightning Network there when it finally syncs. Seems to be a little buggy right now, but it's out there nonetheless.
So I use this on computer. So on computer, it's synced within like 10 minutes. So the idea is that there's no... It doesn't use a Bitcoin full node. It uses Neutrino. So it downloads block filters, which is like a little bit more private way of doing SPV.
Mm-hmm.
So you have no node, you have no Bitcoin node, but you run a full Lightning node. And then they enable autopilot to begin with. So it's supposed to just, it takes your money that you deposit and just immediately puts it into what it thinks is a well-connected node. So then you can immediately send out. And then the idea is that once they add loop and stuff, you'll be able to, you do that and then you just balance out your channel so you can receive instantly as well. It's a very seamless process. On computer, it just works super seamlessly.
It's a beautiful UI too. But you and I have a little beef with the name of the app.
Yeah, it's like this Coinbase blockchain shit all over again. Like I can't call the app Lightning, right?
And yeah, it could be cause for confusion.
It's going to be so confusing. There's going to be the Lightning app.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We officially changed the name of Tales from the Crypt to Tales from the Crypt, a Bitcoin podcast.
There you go.
Could they change it to something like Lightning Wallet app?
Yeah, I mean, I the Lightning Labs already is like, you know, kind of questionable name, right? So it's just like, what are you going to do?
And this is not to say that we don't like the project. We love it. They're pushing us forward. Some of the creator of the Lightning Network paper is working on this stuff. So
they could just call it something completely different, you know, like Oreo or something.
Yeah, let's put it out there. Hey, let's just think about the mistakes that we made in the past. Bitcoin.com, blockchain.info, Coinbase, confusing people of the actual assets Coinbase. Or technologies that it represent. Not that Lightning's doing that, but people
it will.
Think,
I think it will. I think people will see like the Lightning app, and like I think they know that because like that it'll be more likely that that app will get downloaded. So it's like kind of whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just a little bit frustrating. That's all.
In effort to hash out every argument, that's why we brought that up. We it should be hashed out on the table. It should be laid out on the table and discussed. Whatever. It is what it is. It exists.
LND is dope, and they do LND too, so.
Yes.
So anyway, this app is like, I think, this is like the future vision of mainstream Lightning that can compete with like custodial wallets in terms of ease of use, right? Like when this thing works, you're going to have super easy access to a non-custodial Lightning solution in like what? Like an hour?
Yeah. Few more hours for me at the moment, but the vision's there.
It's so weird that yours is still syncing.
It's my internet. My internet sucks here, and I already have three nodes running in this apartment, so that's probably why.
It's straining.
Yeah. I have two nodes. I have two nodes running. This will be my third.
Not a real node, but
the Lightning node.
The problem I have with the computer one is I don't think you can do incoming. I don't think it publicly broadcasts, so you can't do incoming channels. I don't know if that's going to be a feature coming up or not. And yeah. It's interesting that it defaults to USD showing, but if you tap the balance, it switches.
Switches the sats. No, another thing, we're being critical right now, but these is patience. These things are getting rolled out. They happen. This stuff happens in overtime, in increments, and this is a huge step for them to release the app, get it out there. If you freaks download the app, get it up and running, make sure you go to tftc.io/dime-bag and test it out. Buy a thought. Buy a final
slash
thought.
/dime-bag.
Yeah. Slash. Yeah. Yeah, it's a mouthful right there. Not going to try to repeat it. So go check that out. And then I don't know if we talked about this last week. Did we?
What?
Watchtowers. Watchtowers are officially a thing now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why they released this.
Yeah. I don't think we talked about it last week, did we?
I'm not sure. But anyway, Watchtowers is like is the idea that right now if you have the issue that if your lightning node goes offline, if you turn off your computer, you lose internet, your power goes out, the other party in your channel could publish an old state that they have more money and close out the channel and basically take your money. Now, the way that's prevented in Lightning is that if the other party realizes while this is going on, they can issue a punishment transaction where they get all the money. And a watchtower basically allows a third party to watch your channels for you and issue that punishment transaction if the other party maliciously closes on you. And even if you don't have a watchtower watching your channel, just the fact that there are watchtowers out there should prevent, it's like a herd immunity, it should prevent.
It's like having a I have a gun sign on your house or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it
or
should.
You're on camera.
No one's going to go for your channel because they're afraid they're going to lose everything if they do it. It's too much of a punishment.
Watchtowers, they are the bodega smile you're on camera signs of the Lightning Network.
Exactly.
No, and it was cool. Last week at BitDevs here in New York, Willa Byrne gave a demonstration of a watchtower.
That was so dope.
Yeah, watchtower working in real time. And yeah, he
attacked himself and then protected himself with his watchtower.
Yeah, two lightning nodes set up with channels open with each other. He tried to maliciously close one in the watchtower, stopped it from happening, and he got all of that channel liquidity back to the one lightning node that he had running. So those are a thing now. Again, these things happen in increments, steady
progress.
That was
the same team. That was Lightning Labs as well.
Yes, Lightning Labs. I think Bitcoin Connor has been leading the watchtower charge. So shout out to Lightning Labs for dropping this app and watchtowers within 1 week.
Badass.
Yeah. On to vulnerabilities. A lot of vulnerabilities this week. I woke up early this morning and saw Vladimir, is one of the lead maintainers of Bitcoin Core, tweeting about a Firefox vulnerability. It's a zero-day flaw that attacks. Is it a crap?
We don't really. I don't think we know what the attack is, right? It uses JavaScript, right?
Yeah, it uses JavaScript.
But we don't know what they get out of it. It's probably they break the sandbox, is the guess.
It's a type confusion vulnerability. Can occur when manipulating JavaScript objects due to issues in array.pop. This can allow for an exploitable crash. We are aware of targeted attacks, and this will, in the wild, abusing this flaw.
But it.
So it tries to crash your browser and take the data that
They didn't give a full release because it's such a critical vulnerability, and they sent out the patch.
Yeah, 0 day doesn't sound good.
But it seems that then they can execute code on your computer.
Which, if you have cryptocurrency in a
browser wallet on your computer,
in a Joule extension, something like that,
or any other kind of sensitive information.
Yeah.
So update your Firefox. It doesn't look like I don't think the update's out on Linux yet. So, you know, don't use Firefox until it's out. I think maybe you have to push it manually. But, you know, just be aware.
Yeah.
I put the version number that you need.
It's version 67.0.3.
Right. You probably currently have 0.2, so make sure you get that 0.3.
Yes. Yeah, so be aware. Firefox users out there, make sure you update. And if you have, especially if you have any cryptocurrency on online wallets or extensions.
I mean, you shouldn't have much on there, but yeah.
Yeah. And then so another one not on the list, but we remembered right before hitting record is YubiKey. This is coming from the top of my head, so the exact details might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure if somebody gets access to at least 3 public signatures, they can sort of reverse engineer the private key.
Yeah, they got completely owned.
Yeah.
So that's not great.
That's not great at all. It's in, yeah. So that's YubiKey's for you freaks that don't know, is a 2FA solution, a hardware solution to 2FA.
You plug in the little USB drive or yes. Bluetooth it, and that acts as your two-factor token.
Do you think they need physical access to get those signatures, or could those public signatures are public in some places, correct?
I'm not sure. I didn't really... You know, I don't use YubiKey.
I use Google 2FA.
Yeah, like the software-based. I use an open-source one on my phone, and, I think that is... I mean, except for like the U.S. government, you know, that's like a pretty strong threat modeled out compromise trade-off.
Yeah.
Like, well, who wants to carry around the USB drive? And as you can see, like in this case, so I imagine they're going to come out with new ones.
I would too. It seems like a pretty bad vulnerability. And then another bad vulnerability, an unpatchable vulnerability in the Bitcoin world is Trezor. We forgot to talk about this last week, but at Breaking Bitcoin in Amsterdam 2 weekends ago, was it the Ledger team again?
Yep.
Ledger team again. Attacked a bunch of hardware wallets. They found a bunch of vulnerabilities, but they found one unpatchable. They won't say exactly what it is, but they said anybody with $100 worth of hardware in 3 to 5 minutes with your device can get your seed phrase.
Physical access. They need to have
physical access, yes.
They could pull your seed.
Yes.
But they can't pull a passphrase if you use a passphrase. Then they would have to brute force the passphrase.
Yes.
And so Trezor allows you to add a passphrase. Everyone should add a passphrase to their Trezor.
And
it's basically an additional last word added to your seed that you pick and isn't stored on device. You type it on directly on the Trezor.
Yes, and the Model T Trezor lets you do that on the device. That's what you just said.
How does the Trezor one work with the passphrase? Does it pop up like
you have to do it in the browser with your keyboard?
Oh, you have to type it in?
I would imagine.
On your computer? But it's still better than nothing. It's still better to use a passphrase than not to use a passphrase. Because even if they have your passphrase, they still need to get your seed. It just goes both ways.
No, this is something, again, this is another topic that we've talked about a bunch on this podcast. You should assume that if anybody has physical access to your hardware devices, that you're fucked.
And the passphrase buys you time because they can brute force it still. I mean, if it's a really long passphrase, then they might not be able to brute force it. But it buys you time. The other thing is, if you keep money on just the seed without the passphrase, then they might not even know to brute force a passphrase. So, like, let's say they pull the seed from your Trezor. It's got, you know, 4 million sats on it or whatever. Then they're like, okay, we got everything. They're not even going to go look for a passphrase.
Yeah.
So always use a passphrase. Nice additional protection. Multi-sig helps here, too, if you use a multiple hardware. So the reason Ledger is able to pull off these attacks is because Trezor uses completely open hardware and open software. Ledger uses a secure chip that's a proprietary secure chip, so it's closed source. We don't know what's going on in that Ledger chip. So those are two major trade-offs. On one side, the Ledger seems better, but it could easily be backdoored by a major government,
yes.
Right? So if a major government's in your threat model, Ledger might be less secure than a Trezor with a passphrase. While the Trezor, if you have physical access, it's much easier to pull the seed from the device.
Yeah, and I don't want to jinx them, but it seems like Cold Card may be the safest bet in the hardware game these days.
So Cold Card also uses a secure element, but they use an open source secure element that they're running. I'm pretty sure their own open source firmware on it. So it seems to accomplish the best of both worlds. Now, I am definitely not capable of hacking any of this shit. But I would caution, I would say that, you know, Cold Card is a newer entrant. They have less of a target on their back. Ledger is clearly going after competitors. So we'll see, you know, what happens here. I think this is all good that everyone should be attacking each other. This is like the most constructive marketing ever. It makes a more secure environment. But like best case scenario would be, I think, would be to use like a multi-sig where you have all three devices involved in the multi-sig.
Yes, ideally. Again, be aware. It's funny because you have these, and it's obviously for us, we're here making this podcast, giving out advice, and it's like, when you see these things getting pwned, it's like, ah, damn, man. Like I told somebody to buy a Trezor last week, but you just have
but
to be.
But the Trezor, you should already so the way I viewed this release is I already operate under the assumption that if someone gets my hardware wallet in their hands, then they can pull the seed from it. This is why passphrases are so important. On all three of those, the Ledger, Trezor, and the Cold Card, you can use a passphrase. You should use a passphrase. You should just assume that with physical access they can get it. So like the first line of defense is to like properly secure the device, you know, hide it appropriately, you know, store it in different, you know, use different threat modeling. And that's even easier if you use a multi-sig, because then you could balance those different trade-offs.
Yeah. So again, be aware. Be aware. Just be aware that this stuff exists.
Because, like, if you're keeping, like, your seed on a piece of paper,
it's just as vulnerable, yeah.
But it's more vulnerable, right? At least with the Trezor, they need to have, like, specialized, you know, specialized know-how to get into it.
Yeah. No, and I think it's actually, that's a good point to be made. I like that you said it's good. It's overall constructive. And it is overall constructive. And it's probably good that this stuff's being found out now and Bitcoin price point is not as high as it could potentially be in the future. So figuring out all these vulnerabilities and patching them before they become real threats, and the incentive to actually go get physical access of people's treasures is increased.
And Ledger was good about this too, because it is unpatchable. So they spoke to Trezor. They decided not to release how they did it so that it'd be a little bit more difficult for other people to replicate it. And Trezor basically, usually like the way you prove that you've broken something is by showing how you did it. So instead, Trezor was just like, yeah, they did it. Like that happened. So like Trezor admitted to it happening. Ledger explained that it happened, but no one said how it actually is done.
Yes.
No, but Ledger, it does require physical access.
Ledger has a whole team dedicated to just brute forcing and breaking the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, once you get down to physical access, like the person can just, you know, like they could put a gun to your head.
Yeah, what was the other one? They had a keep key vulnerability too, where they found like a glitch in the UI that helped them find seed phrases as well, or pins, I believe.
I don't know. I don't like the keep key because it's just it's a Trezor fork, and it just seems like kind of like a
scammy.
No, not scammy, because they're reputable. I think it's like almost like a side business. It seems like a side hustle, and it doesn't, because it's Shapeshift. Shapeshift owns KeepKey,
mm-hmm.
and they're just forking Trezor and just continuing that. So I don't love that in that regard.
Staying on vulnerabilities, I have not seen this one. You put this in the show notes. Celebrite states they can crack current all popular phones with physical access. So another physical access attack. What is this?
Yeah, I mean, even the most recent iPhones, that's the big revelation, I think, for people. Like, it can do all the major Android phones. Actually, if you have, like, some, like, run-of-the-mill, mid-range Chinese Android phone or something, they might not be able to get in because they don't support them all out of the box.
Yeah, they're, like, marketing this. A comprehensive solution to access iOS and high-end Android devices. Bypass or determine locks and perform a full file system extraction on any iOS device, or a physical extraction or file system, file-based encryption, extraction on many high-end Android devices to get much more data than what is possible through logical extractions and other conventional means.
Scroll down. They have, like, a really good chart. There it is. That was it. Up one more. But, so they can basically just completely own. They're saying, at least, I mean, I imagine they're puffing their chest a little bit, but they're saying they can completely own the iPhones, the newest iPhones, the newest Samsung devices, as long as they have physical access.
Yeah, so we'll put this. You got a UTM link to this. Somebody was tracking you on this one. we'll put this in the show notes.
It was from their Twitter account.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, so they're puffing themselves. Like, I imagine if you use a obnoxiously long passphrase on your iPhone, you might be better off. So like you can, I think on the iPhone you can set like pin, you can set like a bunch of different things. But if you go with actual passphrase and type in your actual passphrase, like it'll be a lot harder for them to do it before it erases itself. I mean, that's all going with Apple not providing backdoor to the government. You know, supposedly they don't, but you're still trusting them because it's all closed source.
I don't think we talked about this yet, but Apple, their latest announcement, I like their anonymous email things that they're doing for people when they sign up for apps.
And the credit card thing, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anonymous credit card number. It's just burner numbers and burner
emails.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. You can never tell. Are these corporations evil? Are they trying to help us? Are there good corporations out there? Is the incentive always trend towards becoming a statist arm of the state?
I think Apple is a very... is great for privacy if the U.S. government isn't your threat model. As long as you're fine with the U.S. government, everything else, like, they're probably really private. They're probably they're probably being honest about it in that regard. Because it makes them money. That's their business. The incentives. It's all about the incentives, right? That's their business model. Their business model is selling you hardware, selling you services attached to the hardware. It's not ads. It's not tracking. So it tends to drive them in the right direction. They kind of stumbled into this privacy thing, and I think they're just embracing it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of vulnerabilities out there that came this week. So we got Firefox, YubiKey, Trezor, and now this cell phone, Brute Force. So beware.
These are the guys that broke the one. Remember the court case on the San Bernardino shooter
with
the iPhone?
And the FBI said, we don't need your help anymore, Apple?
They use Cellebrite.
Okay.
That's the same guys. And then Apple came out with their new security chip and their new encryption and the way they did it and did all this stuff. And then Cellebrite broke it. And now it looks like Apple's going to come out. You know, it's like a whack-a-mole thing. They go back and forth.
Yeah. So beware of that stuff. It's out there. And yeah, just take check of your threat models and your security and your OPSEC and react accordingly.
Yeah, I mean, just assume that if someone has, just like your hardware wallet, just assume if someone has physical access to your phone, they can do fucked up shit to it.
Yeah. Back to Bitcoin. Back to some more cool news, more positive news. Bitcoin hash rate hit an all-time high this week. I'm checking BitInfo charts right now.
What about the death spiral, Marty?
It could still happen. You never know. You never know. It doesn't look like the death spiral happened. That's why the difficulty adjustment exists, to make sure that doesn't happen. Freaks, the difficulty adjustment, I've been saying this for years now, is the most beautiful part of Bitcoin. It's what makes it go, I believe.
I just like I'm like a POW. I love the POW in general.
Yeah.
Just distributed POW is pretty crazy.
Oh, and I haven't pumped this on the pod yet, but Inventing Bitcoin, a book by Jan Pritzker, free ad, coming out soon. I read it a couple weeks ago. Actually, my wife and I read it together. It was cool. Really cute afternoon we had there. But we both learned a lot, and it's less than 90 pages, and you'll be, for anybody who actually wants to know how Bitcoin works and sort of the incentive system and how proof of work and transaction ordering and all that stuff comes to play, I think Jan does an incredible job of laying it out in a very succinct format, and it's a great resource. So when that drops in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, make sure you if you have any Bitcoin curious friends out there, like, how the hell does this work? I would give them this book, 2 hours, and you sort of understand it. He puts it in very good layman's terms.
Badass.
But back to the stats, hash rate hit an all-time high this week. I'm looking at BitInfo charts. It's saying the highest point I can see right here is 61.76 exahash per second, but I feel like it was higher than
Doesn't Tradeblock have it?
Does Tradeblock have it? Tradeblock are
anyway, it definitely hit the all-time high, right? We're like hovering next to the all-time high.
Definitely hit all-time high.
And that's just awesome. It makes sense. The price is going up.
Yeah, Tradeblock does.
Blocks are getting confirmed faster when the price goes up.
Yeah, so around 62.2 exahash per second.
And it's probably a combination of two things. It's a combination of new chips and a combination of people bringing on old hardware that wasn't profitable until the combination of this current difficulty adjustment and the rising price came together.
Yes. And word on the street is that WhatsMiner is coming out with their next batch of miners, and that's going to be the most efficient, powerful miner. And I believe they're supposed to hit the market in late July, early September. So look around that period for an increase of hash rate as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The march forward continues.
Yeah. Austin Storms has a good tweet on the new WhatsMiner that's coming out. It's like crazy more efficient than the S9.
I tend to not believe this shit until it comes out.
That's a good framework to work from.
Yeah, there's a lot of history backing that one up in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Hash rate all-time high. Oh, yeah. A shout-out John Cantrell 97 at John Cantrell 97 on Twitter for putting together DCABTC.com. DCABTC.com, dollar cost average. Cool site where you can basically go to. We talk about stacking sats here. You can create a stacking sats strategy or follow yourself stacking sats and sort of visualize this stuff.
Yeah, it's the ultimate stacking sats website. It's got you put in how much you put in, whether that's per day, per week, per month, per year, How long, when you start, when you end, and you can see historical performance. It gives you two lines. It gives you the line of how much money it's currently worth and how much money was invested, and shows you both. And I redirected stackingsats.com to that. So if you just go to stackingsats.com without the www, because
yeah, for some reason your URLs don't like the www.
Can't get Namecheap to do that. So
yes, that's cool.
It's badass. It's super clean, super nice. It has some educational material on the
John
bottom.
John Cantrell's the same guy who brute forced one of the first keys to the Satoshi's Treasure, correct?
Yeah, he's on our team, not team, that like we have barely not contributed to at all.
Well, I haven't even been following. I saw Satoshi Treasure tweet earlier that they put out a new clue.
It's a new clue today, yeah.
Yeah.
Our team is hustling.
On it. Hey,
we haven't done shit.
Team, keep trucking. Again, we're here. We're just here to pump you guys. We don't expect any.
Yeah, we're the marketing department.
We're the marketing department. We don't expect any of the rewards from the hard work.
I think like
guys
a steak.
Win. Yeah, steak. A pat on the back. All I need is a pat on the back.
Dude, that. Supposedly, Eric said he already bought the Bitcoin for that. That Bitcoin must be worth $2 million right now, right?
Yeah.
Have we doubled? It was started at a
when
million,
it started,
right?
It started in like March or April. It started April, I believe.
It was 200 Bitcoin, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, if I recall correctly.
We said it on the show at some point.
Oh, no, it couldn't be 200 Bitcoin.
It was $1 million.
What price? Like 5,000?
Yeah, I forget. I forget.
I don't know. Anyway, the prize is worth a lot more now. And if we keep pumping, if it takes like another 3 months to get this prize out, could be interesting.
Yeah.
Could also be worth less than it is today. Who knows?
That's true. Anything's possible. Yeah. Be putting all this effort in to cash out Bitcoin at a lower price.
There you go.
Be aware. Last topic, we'll talk about geopolitics. It seems as if the Cold War is getting a little warmer. The U.S. is directly attacking Russia's power grids now. Story was in the New York Times earlier this week, and it's just another.
It seems like Russia's doing it as well.
Yeah, right. Everybody's doing. This has been speculated in the past too. Speculated.
And China's definitely doing it too.
Yeah. So everybody, we've got to grid power power grid attacks at the nation state level now. Which, come on, hey, all you politicians out there, it's a slippery slope. If you start attacking everybody's grids, things are gonna get fucked. You're gonna get attacked back. People are gonna be. In the dark, literally. So just think about what you're starting with these. It's all dick flexing. Hey, all you politicians, all you grubby assholes out there, the very few thousand people that decide on the laws and when not we go to war, just think about this. These are big implications if you start attacking people's grids. There are innocent people living in these cities. Let's take a chill pill.
So what? Love it. What I think is interesting here is that it's very Cold War-esque in that they all seem to have feelers inside of each other's systems.
And it's not direct. It's more indirect.
Yeah, it's basically flexing to say, like, if you do it to us, we'll do it to you. But the other thing that I think that's interesting about this in particular is, you know, a lot of times when we're threat modeling things about Bitcoin, we talk about, like, EMPs and stuff. You could easily see unsecured power networks getting hit by cyber attacks instead of necessarily
a
an EMP.
Yeah, or an EMP. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is like the last. Might not be the last. Bruce Willis movie. What am I thinking?
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's honestly, it's God. What's the movie I'm thinking of? Bruce Willis, where's the cop on Christmas?
Oh, fucking, I watched every single one of those movies.
Me too. I'm just like, it's one of the.
The last one was a cyber attack,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was, this is going to piss me off. You freaks are definitely screaming the movie name.
It's going to piss me off. Are you going to look it up?
I'm looking it up. Got to go to IMDb.
This is ridiculous.
Die Hard.
Die Hard. Die Hard 4, I think, was the one.
I don't
know. God, how did we not know Die Hard?
Die Hard, yeah. Came out like, just, it happens in the moment. You can't remember. Whenever you try to think of it too hard, it never comes to your mind.
They had that ridiculous scene with the jet and shit in that one.
Yeah. Kevin Smith was in that. I like that Die Hard. It was a good Die Hard.
I mean, people have been talking about like crazy cyber attacks for like ever, right?
Yeah.
But I think this could get more real.
It is getting more real, it seems.
And especially when, like, Bitcoin mining enters the picture and stuff like that, if you just have a large amount of money stored in the system, then there could be some interesting attack vectors that use this kind of thing. And, I mean, I also think this shows the benefit that some miners will have disconnected, you know, like...
on their personal grids, yeah.
Yeah, we talk about stranded power, about how Bitcoin enables stranded power. Well, in this situation, stranded power actually gives them an additional benefit in that they wouldn't be affected by grid-level attacks.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So we've talked a lot about vulnerabilities. So there's Firefox, YubiKey, Trezor. Are we
born... Diehard.
Diehard. Energy grids. Like, we talk about being born at an inflection point. Like, are we at this part where, like, we're figuring out all the vulnerabilities and they will be fortified throughout time? Or will this be, like... an ongoing battle where everything's just always susceptible and we have to deal with it, or are we finding out the pain points now and they will be cemented over in the future?
I think part of the reason that it's even being preceded with so heavily by all these major countries is because Russia has already done it. They did it in Ukraine before they did it in Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well. And so when this is how I think the natural world progresses, right? You had the attacks and then you had the solutions. No one like ever thinks ahead. They usually are just like patching shit as it goes. So it's better if everyone just like gets it over with. This is like a little bit like you knock down a whole country's power grid. Like you could have, or like they were talking about in this article. I mean, I don't know how much is fear mongering or not. So take it with a fucking grain of salt.
The New York Times is a blog that tends to fearmonger a little bit.
But the U.S. government is also super inept when it comes to securing their systems. So anyway, this was saying how Russia was able to probe into some of our nuclear reactors. And so like you can imagine like you can do some crazy shit with that. They weren't able to get into like the control systems. They're like specifically isolated, yada, yada, yada. But there's different attack vectors you can do here once you're able to infect these systems.
Another message to you grubby politicians out there. Can we figure out our nuclear security? Because I'm pretty sure like nuclear weapons are still run via like 15-inch floppy disk and stuff like that. It's time to come into the 21st century, especially when we have enough nuclear weapons on the planet to blow it up. So let's figure that out, please.
It's too expensive. I don't want to pay to upgrade it at all.
What if we have to?
I don't know. We'll just patch it. And if there's a problem, we'll patch it.
You grubby politicians went crazy in the mid-20th century building all these nukes. That's a problem we have to deal with in the future. Our kids will have to deal with, too. That's like potential. That stuff could be potentially like degrading and stuff like that. Something to think about, grubby politicians. Yeah, so that's all we have. We went 6 minutes over. What do you want to riff on?
Did you watch the Chernobyl HBO show?
Have not. Have been staying away from
it. I thought that's why you went on the new grant.
No, I've been staying away from it.
So I actually think...
I heard it's very good, though.
I think that we'll get... so I watched the whole thing or whatever. But that's besides the point. I think nuclear power is going to be progressed forward tremendously.
Oh, I think it's the future, but we have to take care of the nuclear shit that we have created like 60, 50 years ago first.
Right. But I think that specifically Bitcoin mining will propel it forward. Like, if you think about it, there was never a financial incentive to figure out fusion. You know, figure out fusion before Bitcoin existed, right? Like, because, like, how do you profit from, like, endless free power? You can't.
Digital gold, baby. The
but
incentive's
you could
there
if
now.
You mined Bitcoin with it, right? I don't know, like crazy shit. Like I think that all these, I think power efficiencies we'll see at like a crazy level, and I think you'll obviously see that with nuclear as well.
So you have that incentive, and then obviously the world's very hot about global warming right now, and nuclear is arguably some of the cleanest energy in the world, and that could be a driver
Except
well.
Except for storage.
Yeah, storage is hard, but. Yeah.
Or like if you have like an inept government, do it.
Build
like
it.
The Chernobyl series.
No, that's like, yeah. Nuclear, yeah. You go back and forth. Like I have these moments where I'm like, yeah, it's the future. And then it's like you see like a Fukushima or Chernobyl. Joe Rogan like used to talk about it all the time on his podcast. Like,
and it fucks over like all the neighboring countries. It fucks over everyone. Yeah. You know?
The ocean. The fish in the ocean.
We all, yeah. It's all of our ocean.
Hey, humans, we're part of nature too. Even though we don't think, even though we live in these concrete boxes made of metal as well, we forget that we're connected with nature. We're part of nature. Let's just remember that, all right?
Maybe Facebook will create a world government to go along with their world currency.
It's going to be the Libra currency in the Libre world.
And like, yeah, MasterCard and PayPal can tell us like what we can pollute and what we can't.
Yeah, that'll be the best future. It's the best future I can imagine.
Idyllic.
Yeah, so we're going to end it on that. Peace and love, freaks. We doubly fucked up on this episode, bro.
We're adding one in the back now.
Yeah, we added one in the front. Now we're hitting you with one on the back. We forgot to pump our node. We're very close to 1% of the Lightning Network liquidity right now.
Yeah, so our node is, you can look us up on 1ml.com by just searching Stacking Sats.
I just hit refresh, and we went up one in capacity. We went from 45th to 44th in capacity.
But we're not at 1%.
We're at 0.990%.
There you go. The routing node for the people, by the people. It is being run by a fan of the pod somewhere at an undisclosed location.
Yes. So the thief is actually a friend of the pod who's helping us out.
There you go. We're ready to fess up on that. And channels are still being reciprocated. If you send a channel that's over 1 million sats, since the price has gone up, over 1 million sats, it will be reciprocated.
The limit is no longer 2 million.
There you go. It's been lowered.
It's been lowered. We're getting close. We're getting close.
Oh, and you can open a channel with the Lightning app. If you download the Lightning app on your phone, that's how you can open a channel easily now.
Very easily.
There you go.
I wonder if it doesn't bug out.
The next update, you can
I wonder
do
if
it.
They have us on their autopilot list. They should.
I bet you we were in the beginning, but now because it runs through Tor, yeah, it fucks up their availability metric, which they're probably favoring ClearNet nodes. But hopefully, you know, it should be.
We'll find out. Freaks, we're one basis point away, 0.01% away from 1%.
Open your channels today.
With our friend. Love you guys.